Turning back in the Word of God today to the passage we have already read from, the book of Isaiah, the chapter 52, and we are looking at verse 12, which really will be our motto text for this year. Isaiah chapter 52 and the verse 12. For ye shall not go out with haste, nor go by flight, for the Lord will go before you, and the God of Israel will be your rearward. How do you describe life on earth? I guess the three most popular descriptions of life are these. It's a battle, or it's a voyage, or it's a march. Many people have spoken about life as being a battle. For my own part, declared William James in the famous passage, I don't know what the sweat and blood and tragedy of this life mean, if they mean anything short of this. If this life be not a real fight, in which something is eternally gained for the universe by success, it is no better than a game of private theatricals from which one may withdraw at will, but it feels like a real fight. Many have spoken of it as being a voyage, the passing of a ship across the sea. That today, as we look out, might be smooth as glass and it's going to be a wonderful crossing, but tomorrow it's tossed by a hurricane, and on we go on that voyage of life until the harbour lights appear on the other side and that desired haven is won. But I think the picture that undoubtedly has the widest appeal is that of life as a march. We talk a lot about the milestones of the years. We put our ear to the ground, we hear the tramp, the tramp, the tramp of the hosts of humanity marching along. We turn the pages of history and we see that cavalcade coming along of the sons of men. Life is a march. Many of the greatest people who have ever lived have taught us to look at life like this. John Bunyan, for one, with his immortal pictures of the road that's been beaten bare by the passing of pilgrims' feet, the pilgrim's progress, it's very suggestive of life being a march. Thomas Carlyle, for another. In Sartor Resartus, Carlyle pictures the generations of men rising out of the darkness, coming into daylight, each living out his own brief, enthralling day, and then plunging back, as he puts it, into the dark again. He says they have hasted stormfully across the astonished earth. Each one has left on the hardest adamant some footprint stamped in. So that, he explains, the last rear of the host will read traces of the earliest van. We are going round full circle. You have it again in Matthew Arnold, in his poem Rugby Chapel. The picture of mankind, he paints, of marching in one vast column across the face of the ages. Many of them are straggling and falling out. Many are growing faint and dispirited, but still the march going on, and still that column pressing forward. Some on to the bound of the waste, others on to the city of God. And you have the same in many of the greatest hymns of the church. Those songs that we sing oftentimes to rally courage in the depths of our souls through the night of doubt and sorrow. Onward goes the pilgrim band, singing songs of expectation, marching to the promised land. That's the history of the sons of men. That's our own life today, with the milestones and the years hurrying by. And that's Isaiah's picture here in Isaiah 52 and 12. Only mark this. He has added something that is dramatically important. Carlyle can speak of the last rear of the host, reading traces of the earliest vanguard all he wants. Isaiah has a far more glorious vision than Carlyle, for he brings the Lord into our march of life, and he declares here in verse 12, for ye shall not go out with haste, nor go by flight, for the Lord will go before you, and the God of Israel will be your rearward. That vanguard, he points out there in front, It's God, the front of the host. He's the spearhead of his people's advance. And that rear guard following on after, he continues, that too is God. God coming up behind. God holding the post of danger at the rear of the army. This is Isaiah's vision. Onward goes that pilgrim band with God in front and with God behind. And your marching soul there in the middle, encircled by God, barricaded in by God, surrounded by God, like as by a wall of steel and iron. That's the promise that rings out to cheer us on our way. The Lord will go before you, and the God of Israel will be your rearward. How comforting this text should be to every child of God. The church has its vanguard. The Lord, Jehovah is the word here, will go before you. And it has its rear guard too. For we're also in danger behind. The enemies can come in and pick us off and attack us in the hinder part. And so we read here, and the God of Israel will be your rearward. So the enemy, the army here, is safe from the enemies in front. And God alone knows how strong those enemies are that we're going to face. And it's also perfectly secure from any foes behind. No matter how malicious and powerful they may be. Jehovah, he's in the van. And the covenant God of Israel, he is behind. So the whole army is safe. Usually, I'll be saying, right, firstly, secondly, and we'll get to thirdly. Today we're not going to get to thirdly because I've just first and second in terms of main heads. The Lord before us is the first one. That's provision. The Lord before us. Provision. Isaiah says here, the Lord will go before you. Has he not gone on in front of his church, guiding it throughout history, up to this current moment? Dangerous has been the journey of the church from the day when it left paradise until today. When, if we can cast our minds back to the early chapters of Genesis, when the church left paradise, I believe that Adam and Eve were in the church of God, because I believe that both of them were redeemed souls. They were chosen of God. They were precious. And when that church of God goes out of paradise, I hear God giving a promise to them even before they leave the garden. And you can read of it in Genesis 3, 14 and 14 through to verse 19. And since that time, what a difficult course the church has been compelled to walk, but how faithfully Jehovah has led the way. I see the church going out from Ur of the Chaldees. It's only a little church. The patriarch Abraham is there at the head of it. But as that little church is dwelling in an enemy country, and as it moves back and forwards to and fro, I observe how the Lord is its constant leader. And in Psalm 105, verses 13 to 17, I read the commentary in those days when they went from one nation to another, from one kingdom to another people. He, God, suffered no man to do them wrong. Yea, he reproved kings for their sakes, saying, touch not mine anointed, and do my prophets no harm. Later I see the church embarking on a black part of her pilgrimage, going down into the land of the cruel Pharaohs, exposing herself to the lash of the taskmasters and to the heat of those burning furnaces. But I see her coming up again out of Egypt, and God is going before her still, leading the way with a burning and a fiery pillar. Psalm 78, verses 52 to 55, but made his own people to go forth like sheep, and guided them in the wilderness like a flock. And he led them on safely, so that they feared not, but the sea overwhelmed their enemies. And he brought them to the border of a sanctuary, even to this mountain which his right hand had purchased. He cast out the heathen before them, and divided them an inheritance by line, and made the tribes of Israel to dwell in their tents. Out of Eden, out of Ur of the Chaldees, out of the land of Egypt and oppression, into the land of Canaan. And Jehovah, He is leading His people forward. I see the church emerged directly from the hand of Christ. 12 disciples. The world looks on and say, "How? What are these guys going to do? 12 men. Look at the shape of them. Most of them fishermen. Some of them tax collectors. Despised among the people. What can these guys hope to achieve?" They're to shake the world. They're there, chosen by Jesus, to uproot old systems of paganism that have become popular. They're there to blot out the names of our after false gods. They're there to overthrow a system and an empire of error that has stood for hundreds of years. A system that has been helped along by the philosophy of learning and by the pump of power. And these 12 fishermen are to do all of this. And they have done it. But they could never have accomplished it unless Jehovah had been walking out before them and leading the way. If you read the history of the church, you'll be forced to confess that whenever the people of the Lord went forward, they could discern the footsteps of Jehovah leading the way. I think of that period of church history that inspires me possibly the most. The times of bitter persecution and titanic struggle. The psalmist puts it in Psalm 2 in the verse 2, "The kings of the earth stood up. The rulers took counsel together against the Lord and against His Christ." They bring out the rack, the bloody sword, the burning faggot. The march of the church goes through the flames. The floods there must be forded. Torments must be endured. Did the church grind to a halt and the wheels come off in the march due to all the martyrdoms that fell upon it like sparks? No. Never did the church seem to march forward with feet so eager. Never were her steps so firm as when she dipped her foot each time in blood and every moment passed through the fire. It's a marvel of those days, even to our minds today, that those men and women were better Christians then, more willing to make a profession of Christ than people are today. The time of persecution was the age of heroes. How? Why? Because God had gone beforehand with His church. Provided stores of grace for stacks of trouble. Provided shelter and mercy for tempests and persecution. Provided an abundance of strength for an avalanche of triumph. Whether it was over the tops of the mountains where her pastors fell frozen by the cold. Whether in the depths of the dungeon where her confessors expired upon the torturous rack. Whether it was in the flame or up there at the block. Everywhere. God went before His church, and she came out triumphant because her great vanguard, the mighty Jehovah, had cleared the path. Has that not been our experience on the road? Can we not look back today and put our finger on place after place and say, "Here and here and here, God has prepared the way for me"? Take the longest view. Look back not only on 2004 that has just passed, but on the whole course of your life. Has God not always been before for you? Think of the blessings, the surprises that His grace has so often brought to us. At birthdays, maybe at Christmas and other occasions, we prepare surprises for the children, those who we love. We smuggle things into the house. We keep them locked away, guard the secrets well. And then when that happy day comes, you're bringing out the presents that have been prepared, and it's a glad and loving surprise. And that's what the great Father of Heaven does time without number for His children. James 1 in the verse 17, "Every good and perfect gift comes from Him." And half the magic of life is this, that it is so full of the thrill of discovering, and all because a God of love and compassion and grace and provision is leading us on the way. Or turn away from the joys that you've had and think of the sorrows. Think of the frustrations and the griefs and the disappointments and the trials. and the pathos of shattered dreams, and see if you can say, looking back now, that even in those experiences, Greece was present. Even there, God was leading on with a definite plan for your life. There's a very interesting incident in the story of Oliver Cromwell and John Hampden, two stalwart makers of England, I guess we could describe them, dates back to the days when these two men were virtually unknown. But they were weary, and they were impatient, looking at the way that the king and the courts and the government were ruining the nation, bringing it down to decadence and disaster, and they decided there was only one course that we can take, and that's to leave this country and never set foot in it again. They knew all about the Mayflower's intrepid adventure, and that kept spurring them on, and their thoughts turned longingly to that new colony away beyond the sea, where the winds of freedom they felt blew, and where life was clean. One day news came to them that a ship lying in the Thames was shortly to make the Atlantic crossing. Quietly, Cromwell and Hampden took their places on board. Everything was ready for the long trip, when at the last moment, messengers ran up with orders from the king that on no account were they to be allowed to see him. They were frustrated, they were angry at their feet. Cromwell and Hampden came ashore. It was the ruin of their hope. But it was that ruin that gave Cromwell to England and shaped the subsequent course of history. Was it not the case that God, even in the wreck of these men's plans, had been going on in front? Can you not say that of the same, the sorrows that have marked your way? Things that maybe at the time when they came in upon you, you were feeling like Job's wife, that the only way out is to curse God and die and turn your back on all this religion thing. And yet today, looking back at those sorrows and trials, you must confess in the words of the hymn writer, I'll bless the hand that guided. I'll bless the heart that planned. God has always been first. He's been the Lord, Jehovah, our vanguard. Therefore, on this the first Sabbath of a new year, with the dark mystery of the veiled future stretching in front of us, wondering, as it's perfectly natural to do, what is waiting there for us behind the curtain, joy or sorrow, friend or foe, success or failure, life or death, we can greet the unseen with a cheer. We talk about the unknown future. We say sometimes timidly we have no notion what's coming to us. We cannot tell, in the Bible's language, what a day may bring forth. Maybe we tremble at the thought of going forward, feeling in our bones that we are going to meet trouble head on. It's all we can do to gaze dubiously into the future. We have no desire to run towards it and embrace it. But this we do know. God is on there in front. The Lord our vanguard. He we know about. Let this be our constant comfort. The Lord Jehovah will go before you. Isn't that enough? Now, allow me to extract more encouragement from this promise in Isaiah 52 and 12 and say this. Jehovah has gone before you already. He has gone before you already. Your future path has all been mapped out in the deep decrees of His predestination. You will not take a step that is not mapped out in the great chart of God's decree. Your troubles, they've already been weighed for you in the scales of His love. Your labor, it's already set aside for you to accomplish by the hand of His strength. Depend upon it. Your times of trial and of grief, your times of joy and sweet relief, all shall come and last and end as shall please your heavenly friend. Remember, you're not a child of chance. If you were, you'd have good reason to fear. You'd have good reason to be in a flap and a panic if you were a child of chance. But as a child of His grace, you will go nowhere this year except where God will send you. How comforting the thought that everything is in the hand of God, that all that may occur to me during the future years of my life is foreordained and is overruled by the great Jehovah, who is my Father and my friend. Also, it's good to remember that God has gone before you in all your future journey in actual preparation in His providence. Spurgeon put it like this: "My God does not hastily erect a tent over me when I come to a certain spot. No, He builds an inn of mercy, and before I get there, He provides a bed of comfort and stores up the old wines of grace that I may feast upon them. And all this is done long before I come to the actual necessity." That is grace. Grace turned, the hymn writer said, "my wandering feet to tread the heavenly road, and new supplies each hour I meet while pressing on to God." Jehovah is there with His provision in place before I get to the place. Didn't Abraham find that at Mount Moriah? Genesis 22. Going up to take his son Isaac to be the lamb of sacrifice. But God had been there before him. Prepared the ram caught by its horns in the thicket to be the substitute. And therefore Abraham learned, and we through him learn as well, how the Lord had the name, "I will provide." I'm certain of this, that on the road I'm to travel during 2005, everything is ready for me. The Lord will go before you. And whatever else is hidden, this is gloriously certain. God is our vanguard. The Lord before us, that's provision. But what we've said up to this point doesn't complete Isaiah's picture of this march. Because I suppose with dramatic imagination he has added this: the Lord will go before you, and the God of Israel will be your rearward. The complete verse, verse 12 of Isaiah 52: "For ye shall not go out with haste, nor go by flight, for the Lord will go before you, and the God of Israel will be your rearward." The Lord Jehovah in front, the God of Israel, that speaks of His covenant status. God of Israel, He will be your rearward. So the Lord before us, that's provision. The Lord behind us, secondly, that's protection. The Lord behind us, protection. If you have a marginal reference in your Bible, you'll notice that a better translation of these words might be: the God of Israel will gather you up. Will gather you up. In war, army numbers are slashed because of stragglers. Some of them desert. Others are overcome by fatigue. But the army of God, here I read, is gathered up. None desert if they are real soldiers of the cross. And while many will stumble and fall foul of some temptations, none will entirely drop upon the road. The God of Israel gathers them up. He who goes before, like a shepherd before the flock, providing pasture for them, comes behind as well, that he might gather the lambs up in his arms, that he might gently lead along those who are with young. It's almost certain here that the prophet had the story of the Exodus in mind when he wrote these words. Israel had escaped from Egypt. Across the open desert, the angel of the Lord was leading them. The pillars of cloud and fire were going on before, when suddenly, from the rear of that marching host, a terrible cry is raised. The Egyptians! We are being pursued! Egypt's on our track! And there, true enough, on that southern horizon, was the cloud of dust, where Pharaoh's chariots and horses were steadily drawing closer. Again the cry is raised, the destroyer is after us, he's gaining ground, what'll we do? And then comes the most splendid touch in that story. Exodus 14 verses 19 and 20, and the angel of God, which went before the camp of Israel, removed and went behind them. And the pillar of cloud went from before their face and stood behind them. And it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel. And it was a cloud and darkness to them. But it gave light by night to these, so that the one came not near the other all the night. Is that not a glorious picture? God coming in to hold the rear and fight the rear guard action. God himself coming down like a great divine barrage that the destroyer couldn't pass. Don't we see a parallel in our lives? The God of Israel will be your rear ward or rear guard. If the Christian life is an onward march, and it is, then it's also a rear guard action. The Church of Jesus has been regularly attacked. And people coming in from behind seem to have done the most damage. Old things that we have forsaken, that we were once in bondage to, but felt the bondage has been broken, they come chasing after us again. And they come so close sometimes that you can feel their hot, foul breath, not only in the back of your neck, but in your soul. Those old perpetual habits, stubborn temptations, strong, masterful sins, and you felt they were gone. And they're on your back again. A man in some high hour of gladness in his life has given Christ his heart. Angels rejoice. The people of God are glad. He is ecstatic. The devil doesn't take that reverse lying down, though. He doesn't say, I'm sorry to lose him, but if your mind is made up, I suppose that settles it. Go with Christ if you must. Nothing so easy as that. He begins the pursuit. And it may be he will never stop pursuing. Alexander White, from the Free St. George's in Scotland, was once describing the way in which the bloodhounds of temptation and remorse can sometimes haunt the soul. You may be saved, he cried, but they will pursue you up to the very gates of heaven and leave the bloody slaver of their jaws upon the golden bars. The enemies of the soul pursue us. And sometimes, God forgive us for thinking it, but think it we do. We think it would be better to desert. It would be better to lie down. It would be better to go over to the foe that pursues us than to fight him off. But what happens? Exactly what happened to Israel. The angel of the Lord that went before the camp, and let's give that angel his right name now, the Christ of God, who went before, removed, and went behind the Lord, our rear guard. And can you not see him? Christ with the sword of the Spirit, holding the rear of the army as it marches, barring the way to our hereditary enemies, delivering us from the danger of their pursuit, defending us from the even worse disaster of desertion. For ye shall not go out with haste, nor go by flight, for the Lord will go before you, and the God of Israel will be your rearward. The Amalekites can come and fall upon the stuff. The Philistines can attack the ammunition. But all the safe Because God is in the rear ward, and let them appear against him, and instantly they will be routed. Where would any of us be today if Christ had not been our rear guard? But as John Bunyan put it, not without great danger to himself, which made me love him the more. I'm going to end by reminding you of what it has cost God to stay there at the back of our onward march, of the terrible price that the rear guard has levied from Jesus. There was an hour, a grey, grim, terrible hour, when Napoleon in Russia, finding Moscow burnt before him and his own supplies for his army running out quickly, he turned around westward to begin the long retreat to Paris. But he summoned the man that he could count on the most, the brave, gallant Marshal Ney. "I appoint you, my marshal," he said, "to command the rear guard. You're to keep the Russians back from the main body of my army. You're to be the breakwater between us and the deluge. You're to block their advance at any price till I extricate my men from this trap of death and get them home to France." Marshal Ney promised that he would do it. He drew his troops into line, and slowly, grimly, they began to fight their way back, taking on themselves the full weight of the Russian march of death, enduring indescribable things from wounds and frost and famine. Terrible days and nights wore past. Then many, many days later, when some officers were playing cards in their quarters in Paris, the door of the room opened. There stood before them the most disheveled figure they had ever seen, old and bent and emaciated, his clothing tattered, his hands trembling, and lines of terrible suffering carved deep into his features. "Who are you?" they cried. But suddenly a flash of recognition came to one of them. "Why," that fellow exclaimed as he jumped to his feet, "it's the Marshal!" The others rose and they saluted. "Tell us, Marshal," they said. "Tell us, for we have been wondering, where is the rear guard?" And that bent, broken figure squared his shoulders for a moment, looked them in the face, and he said, "Sirs, I am the rear guard." And it was a fact. He alone had seen it through. I remind you of the words of Isaiah 63:1, not too far removed from our text. "Who is this that cometh from Edom with dyed garments from Bozrah? He that is red in his apparel, he whose garments are stained in blood, he whose visage is marred more than that of any other man, he whose form has been battered more than the sons of men, he who from his head and hands and feet sorrow and love flow mingled down. Who is he? It is Jesus. I am the rear guard," he says. When you think of your own soul's march from the past into the future, remember there's not only a God on there in front leading the way, he's also behind, facing backwards down the path that you have travelled, and his arms stretched out wide as the cross of Calvary, wide as the world. Those arms are stretched to bar the way and block the enemy's advance. So to any troubled soul in this building this morning, do you know a congregation never meets without at least some troubled souls within it? Some of them apprehensive about the future, others worried about what has happened in the past that might come back again to haunt them. The word of God is, through Christ, take heart. The past is God's, and the future is God's, and the power of the love of Jesus to hold your spirit strong and steady is far greater than the power of outward circumstances and devilish assaults to to disturb your peace. So was Bunyan's pilgrim. Keep marching. Keep on singing. Past the milestones of the years. Keep marching. Until your long road brings you to the sunset, the evening star, the journey's end, and the towers and turrets of the city of God appear beyond the river. For ye shall not go out with haste, nor go by flight. For the Lord will go before you, and the God of Israel will be your rearward. God is your vanguard, and he is also your rear guard. So we can sing as we march. To those who at the beginning of this new year are still unconverted, let me say this. The words of Isaiah 52 are certainly prophetic of Israel's deliverance out of the Babylonian captivity that she was in, and tell of her resettlement in her own land. Now, being that, they're a prophetic picture of the redemption of God's people by Jesus Christ, of our deliverance by him into the glorious liberty of the sons and the daughters of God. And you can check out how this passage is used in Romans 10, the verse 15. But God promises to redeem his people, to gather them up in the arms of his grace. Promises he will glorify his name and exalt his son in the process. But in verses 1 and 2 of the chapter, God calls on that people to awake, to stir themselves, to believe him, to expect deliverance. And here at the start of 2005, that call is most certainly applicable to you. Still in sin? Awake from your death and live. Awake from your distrust and believe. Awake from your despondency and rejoice. Awake from your dullness and sing. God has promised to save all who will awake at his word, and he will do it. If you hear his voice and don't harden your heart, simply look to Christ in faith. Come, bow before, trust this great Redeemer. For ye shall not go out with haste, nor go by flight. For the Lord will go before you, and the God of Israel will be your reward.